Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where we cannot flip that snow switch off for the life of me. You guys heard me complaining last week because we had a 6 inches of snow and half a day off, and then another 6 or 7 inches of snow, and every warnings, wind chill warnings last week, almost all week, minus 30, minus 45. So, of course, the snow wasn't going anywhere. It was too cold for people to dig out. I think one night there was 1,100 cars that had to be rescued. And it was interesting because the police had asked, unless you really have to go out, we're like, really not kidding, it'd be a good idea to stay home because the brine and whatever else they put on the streets to try to make the snow not turn into ice and stick, it was too cold and too windy, it wasn't going to work. And so they asked people to stay home. There's big trucks out plowing as, you know, fast as they can because the snow was making a whiteout. It was horrible. And of course, all these people felt like they needed to go out. And so, you know, they were down embankments and tires spinning. The interstate looked a lot like one of those bumper car rings that you see at a carnival. I didn't hear of anyone getting hurt. I'm sure someone probably did, but I didn't hear that. I just found myself wondering what was so important for all those people to be out. Some of them, sure, but not as many as were out. And I would hate to have my car have to be in the body shop right now, because we'll see in March. It's going to take a long time. And I bring that up because we did get a little break, and tomorrow, here we go again. Snow tomorrow, going into those wind chills through Saturday. And so it's been a crazy January here in the Midwest. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. I'm here every Wednesday night, but I play a generic intro when I have a co-host, which, yeah, she can be that tonight, but she's going to be her own host. We've got a brand new host tonight, and I'm so excited to have Michelle Kaufman on. I'm going to bring her on in just a moment, but that song for the intro is called Words, and it was actually written and performed by the founder of our network, Craig Cecilia. And so I like to play that intro, and I forgot that it doesn't introduce me or the show, Recovery Now. So I hope you'll tune in every Wednesday, but tonight is a special night. First, for those of you who are not familiar, maybe dropping in for the first time because you're snowbound. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, if you want to know a little bit more about me, check out my website, inaflash.org. How quickly our lives can change, right? Inaflash.org for all of our shows, both when they're on live and afterward on demand, braininjuryradio.com. And brainnetwork.ngo, which we'll get to, is where you can find out more about Michelle Kaufman. Is a twice recovered traumatic brain injury survivor, has years of experience supporting others in positive approaches in healing. Her professional accounting career with the United States Attorney's Office ended at the bottom of the stairs she fell down, and she could no longer add 6 and 7 without taking off her shoes. Michelle facilitated in-person support groups at Harborview Support Group, Swedish Cherry Hill. Oh, we have to put words in. Can we do Omaha places? Benaroya Hall and West Seattle Senior Center over a decade on Thursdays, growing other leaders in the community. Currently leading a 5 peer-to-peer support groups on Brain Network with Dr. Lisa Hirsch, her partner, who you will be meeting soon, maybe next week, if not the month after. They offer hope and connect survivors, friends, families, and professionals working on moving forward towards a happy life, both physically and mentally. She lives in Seattle with her husband, Tom, and hallelujah, her 7-year-old service dog, 125-pound Newfoundland standard poodle mix. Again, for more, see brainnetwork.ng. That's a different one, not.com.ngo. Again, you can find all of this in the program notes. Just click on the link, or you might have already clicked on the link to be listening to this show. If you're driving or sitting in your recliner and not by a pen, you can always find the relevant websites in my program notes. So starting next week, which is the 23rd, next Tuesday, it happens to be the fourth Tuesday of the month. And then, starting then, and after the fourth Tuesday of every month, is going to be Michelle's new show, I Am Hope. Honest, open, proud, and enough. Thus the name of her new show. Again, that's going to be the fourth Tuesday of each month, starting next Tuesday. Pin her in for next Tuesday and make her feel welcome here in the Brain Injury Radio community. You will be shocked and awed by her guests next week. With that, I'm happy to introduce you to Michelle. But I should unmute her mic to do that. Yeah. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show. Welcome to your new network.
Why, thank you, Kim. Thank you, everybody. This is so very exciting tonight to be with you.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. And Craig was really responsible. He let me know. I'm always looking for talented hosts, and we've had the opportunity to visit a few times and train, and I'm really excited about having you here, and I know everybody else will be too. So this is great. Why don't we start out with you telling us a little bit about yourself? You know, this is a funny job, you know, when one of the qualifications required is that you have a brain injury. You don't hear that in the prerequisites to a lot of different jobs. I kind of touched upon it in your bio, but a couple things I think even happened before that. So why don't you tell everybody's always curious around here, you know, what'd you do to your brain? Was it an accident? Was it a stroke? You know, people are interested to hear how we came to be here. So let's start out with a little background on you. It kind of told what you were doing before, but maybe just touch on that again, and then what happened to rock your world and be a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to introduce myself to all the listeners. I was born right here in Seattle, Washington, where I live, 1957, on Christmas Eve night. And unfortunately, my mother had pancreatic cancer and died before I went to kindergarten. So as I like to say to people, I was kind of raised by the wolves. Which was myself, a sister 2 years older who really didn't care for me much. She said I ruined her second Christmas being born on Christmas Eve and everyone thereafter because I expected a birthday party as a child and she wanted to have Christmas Eve. So I could kind of see her point there. And then the two parents, my dad remarried right away to help with us girls, but they were both dry drunks with 50 years of sobriety. So I pretty much ended up with my innate beliefs to carry me through the rest of my life because I really didn't have anybody to redirect me. So I found alcohol at a very young age. I like to say I was born alcoholic, was my first disability, and spent the rest of my life trying to drink away an abusive, hard, hard childhood. But I kept my happy-go-lucky self through it. I was a very successful alcoholic, 13 years of ballet and private flute. I was bred to marry a millionaire, which I did. Kind of a funny story. My dad's name was Tommy Thompson. I was born Michelle Thompson. I married a man named Thomas Daniel Boone, Jr., who was literally, like I said, the millionaire's fifth. Daniel Boone was his fifth great uncle. They had all the genealogy, looked just like him. Absolutely wonderful man, but unfortunately had Tourette's. Anyway, so we had a child together, and we couldn't tell if it was a boy or a girl, and I wanted to name a little girl after my mother, Barbara. So I told my husband, you go ahead. If it's a boy, you name him. If it's a girl, I'll name him. No discussion. And he said, fine. Well, we had a little boy, and so he named him Thomas Daniel Boone, Jr. I really couldn't say much because I'd made the deal, and, I mean, they were real Daniel Boones, so it was kind of cool. 2.5 years into the marriage, he came down with Tourette's, blackened both my eyes, threw me down a flight of stairs with the young child in my hand. So I walked away in my little battered clothes. And 3 months later, I was in the AA program, and I was sponsoring a young lady, and I went to visit her, and a man got on the elevator on the bottom floor, and we locked eyes, and he got off. He was going to visit the same young lady. Hmm. I fell in love. I knew I'd marry him when I saw him in the elevator. We've been married 31 years. His name is Thomas Gerald Kaufman. So I got my dad, Tom, the first husband, Tom, the son, Tom, the second husband, Tom. Once again, a year and a half into our marriage, they can't tell us I'm pregnant if it's going to be a little boy or a little girl. And I make the same deal. And I say, okay, if it's a little girl, please just let me name her Barbara. And if it's a little boy, you can name him whatever you want, which this time was really cool because his mom's name was Barbara also. So he was thrilled either way when we had a little boy. Guess what he named him?
Uh-oh.
Thomas Hoffman. So now I got the five of them all. So when I say Tom, everybody looks, but we'll make it easy. We'll call him the first husband, my husband, Tom, oldest son, Tommy, youngest son, we call Andrew, his middle name, and my father's past. So as I go through the tales and you get to know me as I host these wonderful shows, there's an awful lot of Toms that'll come in and out of the picture.
Yeah, so you've been playing the Tom-Tom for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very good. So I get up to the bottom of the stairs and I go to start a new life. This is my first experience with brain injury, not mine. I was not affected in that fall. But that was when he came out with his Tourette's. And at that time, we didn't know it. It was a year and a half later before he got diagnosed. He got on the medicine. And the story ends so wonderfully. The husbands are still all best friends. My two kids have both had two dads. Everybody kept their eyes on the ball. And it worked out in the end. But that was my first experience with brain injury, was when he was diagnosed with Tourette's. The day before my 50th birthday, In 2007, my dad died, and he was the person in my world that really had me keep it together through all the years, being such a successful alcoholic, working my way to the top of the U.S. Attorney's Office, having stayed in sobriety through raising my kids. He just was really the rock in my life, and when I lost him, things went sideways, and I had a hard time focusing on reality and staying in the real world a lot of the time. And I slipped deep into depression and started feeding into my bad behavior and poor habits and started drinking hard, which is what ended me up at the bottom of my basement stairs on September 10th of 2010. I'm not sure how long I'd been down there. I thought I was home alone. My 16-year-old at the time, my youngest son, had been out in the backyard twirling his staff. He studied the martial arts. And for some reason, when he came in the house, he looked down those stairs that there was nothing in that basement except for a washer, dryer, some dirty clothes, and a freezer full of frozen food that a 16-year-old young man wanted nothing to do with. So it was a gift that he found me at all. He got me to my feet, and I went on a huge seizure. He didn't have any idea what was wrong. He laid me down, called 911, and they rushed me to Harborview, where they removed a third of my skull. My brain had shifted 8 millimeters to the right. On the way down, I hit all four lobes, and at the bottom, I landed on the back of my head. And so the blood flooding through there had actually moved my brain so far that they had to take the skull off. Seven surgeries ensued to put it back on. They took my trapezius, my latissimus out of my back, running it up through my neck, trying to get blood to my brain. And when all that didn't work, they ended up opening my jugular and giving me the 8 hours of microbiotic arm surgery to restore the blood and to get me to get all back to work again. So I'm $1 million in parts and labor from Harborview. So grateful,
good Lord,
to be alive. And I've got a lot of paying it back to do, which is why I've just been given back since the first injury.
Wow, you're truly a miracle. I mean, like a pinball machine, you got every lobe hit, and that must have been a hell of a surgeries to go through and recover from. Yikes.
It was a
and
really
thank God
long
your
journey,
son
Kim.
Was there.
Well, I wouldn't be here today if he hadn't gone and looked down. It was, like I said, there was nothing down there for him except his mom about dying. So miracles every day. And I truly, truly believe that I was caught on the way down those stairs, that I had so much more work and my purpose here. And, you know, it was much later after that that I finally found my purpose. And I think part of brain injury, the beautiful part is of it is when you get to reinvent yourself, you get a chance to take all the parts of all
too.
The good things in you that worked really well and leave the things that perhaps didn't behind. So I could not read. I could read. I was just very clever before I fell. But I could say the words. I could spell them. I could use them in a sentence. But at the end of every sentence, I had absolutely no idea what I'd read for 4 years. I went back and got second and third grade books, and I'd make myself little tests, and Dick and Jane, and who was Jane, and what was the dog's name, and what did he chase across the street through. And then the next day, I would try to read the book, because I would just go through and pick out questions, because I didn't have the understanding. So I would try and read the book, and then I would try and answer the questions I'd made the day before, because I have very little recollection from the day before to this day. I take a lot of notes. So... It made it better, and it gave me the grace to be able to fake it better and to get along. But it was 4 years, a full 4 years later. It was like it was in December of 2013. It was like somebody flipped a light switch, and suddenly I had recall. In a second, just like I had the brain injury. It was the most amazing thing, and I haven't talked to many other people that have had it that way, people that, you know, came out of their brain injury and could draw and speak French and do algebra that they couldn't do before. None of that. I was so back on my game that my partner, who I did all this brain injury support work with, Joel Aguatin, we spoke at the Oregon Traumatic Brain Injury Conference in 2014 in March, and then in April we spoke at the Washington Brain Injury Conference. And I just thought that I had my world back completely. I thought everything was under control, and it was, until Father's Day weekend on June 13th, 2014. We were in our F-150 with the son who found me at the bottom of the stairs, three of his best friends and my husband, big truck, six seatbelts, six people. I was the only gal. I was the smallest, so I was in the middle of the back seat. I'd never ridden in my back seat before. I did not realize that there was no headrest. So we are sitting waiting to cross Highway 2 at I-90, turning left, and we are just absolutely rocking away to Bohemian Rhapsody. All six of us are just singing at the top of our lungs, waiting for the light to change. We never saw her coming. She was texting on the freeway, driving her boyfriend's daddy's little Dodge Neon, and she drove it without braking all the way up to her windshield wipers under my F-150. She walked away with her little pink phone she was texting on, and I received a second horrific traumatic brain injury. Way worse than the first one, if you ask me, because you know why?
Oh, my God.
I looked just the same. I looked just the same. In the first accident, of course, with seven surgeries, I have a huge dent down the middle of my forehead. I'm missing part my temple, missing part my skull. I am physically disfigured. So I looked injured. The surgeries, the helmets, the walkers. I took everything I owned with me on my walker, all my papers and my books and my notebooks, because I didn't want anybody to know that I didn't remember yesterday. It was my secret, I thought. but I was on 270 milligrams of morphine and 58 Oxycontin a day for the breakthrough pain. So I pretty much think everybody knew. You can't hide being that high. I would like nod out in, you know, my meetings. But I got through, and it allowed me to get out, and allowed me to put aside. I didn't have the comprehension to know how much I was hurt, to know how much I had been affected, how much it had affected my family, my life, and those around me, my outcomes, my filter. Lordy, lordy, lordy. That filter was a big problem for me in the beginning, not just the drugs, but I just felt the need to say whatever came across my mind. Sure, it's not just me that happens to. So anyway, back on all 13 medications I was on from the first accident, which I had been off all of them except for 5 milligrams of oxycodone, back on all of the therapies, occupational, physical, recreational, mental rehab, psych rehab, recreational therapy, all of them. I was back in every single one of them for another couple years. Once again, I did not know who my name is. But this
God,
I looked just fine, like most of my friends had to go through the first time that had a hard time getting diagnosed. And my own mother-in-law told me, who I was her caretaker for 15 years at the time, that I just run out of attention. I hadn't really, there was obviously nothing wrong with me now. And I just, you know, wanted the drugs back. So I ended up having to move out of the house. I moved over to Central Washington by Camp Nowhere, the 23 acres that we bought with the money from the young lady who wanted to do the texting on the freeway. Our brain injury camp we're starting. And I moved 2 hours away from home. And I took my dog and I moved because I needed to see that Michelle was okay and Michelle could do it herself, even though she had 2 brain injuries now. And that's a whole nother program, trying to work when you're not ready after brain injury. So
yeah,
I did the support groups and led other people. I took advantage of every opportunity and every suggestion that the nice people at Harborview and the vestibular clinics and the other places that I had to go for rehab suggested to me. With the first accident, it was mostly Western medicine, and I didn't get very far. But with the second accident, I had more options because I had insurance money that I could work with a little more to get more Eastern medicine, and I got acupuncture and massage and different types of things that had just not been available to me the first round. So much to offer, so much to give, and have learned so much about myself after these 2 brain injuries, and just want to make it easier for people who come behind so that they don't fall through the gaps. I never qualified for SSDI because I'd been contracting. I had a husband, so I didn't qualify. Even when I moved out alone, I would have had to divorce him to get any kind of help at all other than my $800 a month. At that time, it was 6 1/4 on welfare. I never got Social Security till I turned 65. So tough road for everybody out there, but there's just a little bit of background about me and the fall, and I do like to talk about how I fell down, but I more like to talk about how I got back up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's more potency in how you got back up by hearing about the gravity of your falling down. A lot of people would stop at that point. You know, it would be, the change would be too much. You know, a couple things you said about, I know, for me, more like your second time, I didn't have an obvious tell, and I went back to work, and you talked about faking it, and it's funny that we should have to feel the need to fake it, for one thing, people that are injured. But I watched it with someone else close to me, totally different condition, trying to fake it, like they could do things that they really couldn't, or that we used to do with ease, and it was no longer easy. It was taking a great amount of channeled focus, you know, to be able to do those things. And as for the traditional medical model, it seems, you know, I've been around here for a while interviewing people and survivors, and it seems like so many, the good part about the traditional medical model is they save your life, not to be minimized at all. That's a good thing. But after they've saved your life, they don't give you a lot of tips on how to live with the pieces you have left. And there's so many people out there. I remember when I was invited to be a host many moons ago, I didn't think, I told them I wasn't qualified, that I just found out about internet radio 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't tech savvy, and I didn't know anything about broadcasting, and thanks for the thought, but I'm not your gal. And he, you know, made a little small talk. We were going to get off the phone, and then he said, yeah, let me just ask you one thing. He said, were you an author before you wrote your book? No. And were you an artist before you had your exhibit? No. And you've got a brain injury, right? Yes. What night would you like? And it just spilled out my mouth Wednesday night. And, you know, here I've been for over 13 years. And what the reason why, won't speak for him, but the reason why he expanded to 7 nights a week, he was doing the show for a couple years, maybe short of that, a little bit, one night a week himself. And he wasn't as far out from his injury. And I think it was, you know, he's younger, so he knew about internet radio.
And, yeah.
It was maybe cathartic being able to talk about what he went through, what he was going through. But what he wasn't expecting is that people all over the world were going to be reaching out to the relatability. They thought they were the only ones. Mm. They thought they were the only ones that felt isolated, polarized, forgot things, you know, had physical issues, emotional issues, cognitive issues, you name it, throw a dart, you know, and we have some combination of them. And I remember one of the first times I called in, I called in just in time for Craig to talk about all the post-it notes he had around his house.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I either turned beet red or all the color drained from my face. I'm not sure. I wasn't by a mirror, but I felt like a kid who got caught with her hand in the cookie jar. I did that. I didn't think anybody else did that. And here's this guy on broadcasting all over the world who lives in a world of post-it notes and even forgets sometimes where he put the post-it note, for God's sake. And so, you know, that's kind of what happened, and what fuels us all of these years is that all the things you don't hear from your doctor do hear from other survivors. And it seems that peer-to-peer support is really one of the most productive ways of being able to decipher what's going on with me, with you, still happens after all these years. For me, you know, somebody will say something and I've probably heard it a lot of times before, but I wasn't in a place to be able to absorb that and conjugate it into a compensatory strategy to help me live a better quality of life. And this just happened to be the moment for that kernel, you know. And so I think as much as we're here and find a new element of purpose for our life and want so much to share that with others so they don't have to go through what we did, walk down the path that we did, that every time you do a show, you walk off with a takeaway yourself as the host, no matter how long you've been here, and that is such a gift.
It sounds so wonderful, you know, to be able to let people know that it's okay to go three steps forward and one step back. That when we put ourselves out and we try real hard to conquer a goal or to move forward with some steps that we want to take, even if they're little steps, that sometimes we just kind of sets us to sitting back down again. And we've got to rise back up and start over. You know, going back to work for me, it wasn't because I had to, like most people I hear, you know. There's just no choice. There is no, you're going to work and you're going to buck it up and you're going to do it. I went and did it because I needed to show myself that Michelle could still do it. I think brain injury comes for a lot of us with grandiose ideas on, you know, so many people say, oh gosh, I've got all this time. I'm going to go get my doctorate, you know, and it, they may have a master's, they may have a BA, they may have an AA, they do have a lot of time, but they forgot how to study, or reading is hard, or time management is a real issue some days, and some days we don't even get out of bed, and so that's really hard to go to school like that, and so I just had to prove to myself that I could still get up and maintain and show up and be ready, and it about killed me. I was taking advantage of it every opportunity. When people said, one boss said to me, Kim, she said, Michelle, I don't know how to treat you. And I thought, well, what does she mean? I'm just, treat me like a human, you know, just treat me like everybody else and let me tell you if I have issues and help me work out my differences, but please don't treat me different, because, you know, I didn't know even what that meant.
What did that mean?
You know, to this day, I don't really know. I think she wanted me to tell her how to deal with me. Well, like, here's a really great example. This was at a dog. The place was called the Dog Resort, and it was a dog kennel, and I went to go do accounting. Well, she found that I was just so clever and customer-friendly that she wanted to put me on the front desk to accept the dogs and run the computers, and part of this was she wanted me to maintain the front office. So she said to me when she came in one day, I'd like you to wash the front door, because the little doggies put their nose against it and jump up on it with their paws, and it was a glass door. It was just a mess. So I went and got the Windex. I went and got some paper towels, right? And I sprayed the Windex on both sides, and I rubbed it like three or four times, and I did it like twice over really good to make sure I had it just right for the boss. I thought she was just really neat giving me this chance to, you know, be in this dog resort. And I just love, I could bring Hallelujah with me. It was so perfect. She came back about 5 minutes later and she said, were you going to do the door?
No.
And I looked at her and I picked up my rag and my towels and I said, I just finished with the door. And she said, do I need to show you how to wash the door? And I said, no, I sprayed this stuff and I rubbed it. And I walked up there and I said, do you want to show me what the problem was? And she got really irate with me. Well, it was my vision. The sun and the glare on the door with my brain injury vision. I couldn't see. I had just made a bigger mess than it was, Kim. But I had done the work, and I had rubbed it all over. I mean, I was doing, like, the little, you know, wipe on, wipe off Karate Kid thing. I mean, I was so into it. This was going to be the best door job ever, okay? Both sides twice. And it just kind of seemed to go like that for me, you know. So I guess maybe when she asked how she should treat me, maybe she had some real bearing to that, realizing that, you know, her forensic accountant didn't know how to wash a door. So, yeah. Same thing when they wanted me to wash a dog one day. I said, are there instructions? And the lady looked at me and said, do you not know how to wash a dog? And I said, well, I wash my dog at home, but I would hope for the $122 we're charging, we're going to give this dog something way more special than what I know how to do. You know, again, Michelle's way to influence people and win friends. Yeah. It was the filter thing, right? The best intentions, yeah. But the worst delivery in the world. I'm sure other people have felt that way, right?
Oh, of course. And for those that aren't familiar or might be new, when we throw around words like filter, Michelle explained that a little bit in the beginning when she said that we say what's on our mind without maybe thinking it through first and how that might come off. Sometimes not having a filter, it's definitely honest, brutally so, and not always
received well. And it's not that I didn't practice
everything.
Right. I still would practice everything in my head before I said it, because my words would always be mixed up, get in front of another. It's special one would get in there at church. I would practice it in my head, but I didn't understand the effect of my words. They came out straight and the way I wanted them. But if you really asked me, you know, if your derriere looked just a little large in these jeans, you wouldn't want to hear the answer. Yeah. And you're right, just brutally honest is just kind of what it was. And some of that stuff that should just really be the quiet part just gets said out loud sometimes. And kind of like the doctors, you know, as they pat themselves on the back as you go out the door, and because they have put you back all together again and you're looking just spit spot, and you know, the surgery was a complete success. However, we lost the patient. You know, I've walked out of so many doctor's offices so depleted and dejected, thinking that I was going to be helped. And maybe a little bit of it was I wanted magic dust. I wanted a miracle. I wanted them just to, you know, Domini, you're all fixed now. Because, you know, I really didn't sign up for this brain injury event. And, and some of it was, even in the good part, when I would graduate from therapies, physical therapy, psych rehab, and, you know, they'd kind of line up and escort you out the door with a fanfare because you'd graduated, but I always kind of felt like I got dejected and sent away because I was enjoying it and I was getting better, and I didn't see that endpoint that they saw. I'm pretty sure probably came to my end of my widgets that the insurance allowed more than I graduated.
Yeah, I bet.
But that was where my support groups came in and my community came in, because that's when we could fall in with each other and talk about the different therapies and the different treatments and the different parts of recovery that we had gotten and our friends hadn't. So it was helpful.
Hey, Michelle, I've got somebody who has a question. One of the things I forgot to tell you in training, and I will say it now, remember I told you on the switchboard that all the numbers line up on the switchboard?
Yeah.
The left side of the computer? Okay, well, one thing we say is if you have any questions, that's if you're inviting them, which I am now, because you tell people to press 1. And when they press 1, you'll see a little white hand go up by the telephone number, and that means that someone has a question. Now, sometimes you might not be taking questions, and that's one of those things you'll have to figure out on your own. But we're going to take this question or comment. 509, you're on
Wonderful.
The air. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Zebra. I have a question there on that there. Does it have to be a white hand that comes up?
not if I have an ink pen.
Hi, Michelle. This is Craig. How are you?
Hey, Craig.
Can you hear me?
I'm
okay,
so
or?
Good. I hear
good,
you, Craig.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Yeah, I was listening, but I wanted to call in and say, man, you're going to have a good show. Yeah, I think, you just got to make sure you have guests, and, you know, otherwise you talk to yourself. And that's okay, too, sometimes. I talk to myself all the time.
I found that our women are even better. Our women are even better at doing that. I get to be sexist with myself, but, you know, we can sit there, pick a topic and talk about it for 2 hours, only taking a couple of breaths, a lot of us. So
very quiet breaths.
I don't think that'll be a problem. But with all the support groups, you know, both of you guys, you're in the haven of the support area, largely. I know, Craig, and now I'm hearing you're part of it, Michelle, but I've heard about People First and, you know, the Puzzle Club and all the camp and all the different things that Craig has done over these years, and it's a haven for people looking for support. We don't have support groups here. Now, I realize I could go start one, but...
Before you go too far, I want to stick to my thought. I took my medicine, my bedtime medicine, so I'm gonna. My thoughts are gonna be very shallow. But that's myself off track. keep going. Sorry. If I remember, I will.
I remember.
I was just gonna say
we don't have any support groups here, and mine happened in 1995, and we had a support group once in for 1 year in about 2012, Brain Injury Association sent that Kim girl or somebody here to Omaha, and out of the medical center, they gave a room, and we had a support group. But, you know, one thing that made it difficult, especially this time of year, is a lot of us don't drive or don't drive at night well, and it gets so dark so early. And so there were quite a few people there. It started in, like, September. And by, what is it, later in November when the clocks change and it's dark by 5 o'clock, this support group was at 7 in the evening. And I thought, that's just how much they don't know about us. The majority of the people here can't get here at 7 o'clock because it's dark, you know, and it doesn't work out. The support group lasted a year, and because winter came then, and that made it even worse. It was dark and it was winter, and people weren't able to make it. And, of course, I don't think they, whenever this was, I don't think that they made Skype or Zoom yet. I don't think a lot of us even knew that existed until COVID. But there was just no way that group was destined to fail. And in a year it did, and there's never been another. So since 1995 to today, no support group. There isn't a place where you go and find peer-to-peer support. I come here every week, but there, for all the other people out there, there isn't a place to go. And so I commend you guys. Certainly, like I said, I could go do that, but I can't go do that. I'm pretty focused on doing my show once a week. You know, people think sometimes we just show up, you know, and do our time on the show, but the time that it takes, you know, to cultivate guests, you know, to be on the show, to book the show, to promote the show, you know, to brief ourselves on the notes if we book out a little ways like I try to do, that's enough. You know, that's enough of a load. And you talk to a lot of people that you meet on air after you've been here for a while. Michael called me before the show started, said to welcome you, Michelle. You'll hear from Michael is a New York Italian who moved to Florida, and he's like a big teddy bear, got the strong Italian, how you doing? Michelle, how you doing? Welcome to the show. So some night you'll hear Michael calling in, and we've got regulars that call in, but you know, there you guys actually have things going on and groups of people who have become friends over a long period of time, and I just think that's wonderful. We have a brain injury, let's see, it's either an association or an alliance. It was an association, now it's an alliance. It's in another city, which was really crazy because this is the largest city. This is where the medical center is that would take care of most of the brain injuries. But it's about an hour away, and 1¼ gal run it. And so basically what you've got is what you've got a lot around the rest of the country. And in a lot of other maladies, is you've got the once a year run where you get the scratchy cheap T-shirt for the donation. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't help you on your day to day, or you got to do a lot of work in the room on that once a year walk, you know, to try to find people that you'd take numbers and maybe stay in touch with. So I think it's a cool thing that you guys do. This is, you know, the only thing I can do. Call into this number, you know, 7 nights a week. There's going to be somebody at this number at 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock our time, 9 o'clock Central, 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain. And hopefully you can find some help. And then for those that don't know, all of these shows that are live, like this one is live right now, within an hour after the show goes off the air, with the same link, the show is on demand. And so if you're feeling lonely, you don't have a support group or a person you can call, you can go to braininjuryradio.com, scroll down to the on-demand section, and we've got all the way back to 2012. We've got hundreds of shows. Just leaf through there and find a topic that resonates with you, and that's a place that you could go and at least be close enough to hear brain injury survivors talking about topics that you might be grappling with. Did you get your thought back, Craig?
So, yeah, actually, I think we go back to 2008. So I'm going to verify that while I'm talking to you. But, yeah.
Okay,
so,
don't knock
we
me off the air.
We were talking about group. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we were talking about workers. So I know that at one point in time, it looked like Washington was really cruising. And we were really making some progress there for a while. And it started with me, Tommy Manning, and Penny Condell. What is the gal? She does the TBI.com. What's her name? You know who it is. I like her. African American. Who?
No, she's not African American. Janet, I said.
No, I know Janet Mott. No, I Janet Mott is smart, but she's a little devious little creature. But we'll leave her alone.
I was talking Janet Novinger.
Oh yeah, I like Janet Novinger. I like her, but she's a little self-serving. But I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. You know, she runs it as a business consulting and. So she was one of the more professional survivors that I got a chance to work with. So I was okay. So when me, Tommy, Penny, we were thriving. We wanted to create more opportunity and then more groups because we knew the need out there. You know, we were having people, you know, drive, you know, long distances to come to the groups, you know, and then, of course, not being able to make a lot of them because it was such a long distance. But, you know, and then the social things that we were doing, you know, those were huge. And so, and we really built up something good. And so all these attorneys and, people in the state, and we got legislators, and you know, Tommy got Flanagan, I got my guy over on my end. So we got people, we got it through. It took a couple of years, kind of like not the battle pass, but we finally got it passed. And the whole concept was to provide support survivors opportunities to provide support for themselves. You know, like a conference, and you know, and we were supposed to be part of the overall infrastructure of it, you know, like the council. You know, we were supposed to have a certain amount of survivors that were picked, you know. And what happens sometimes on governor's committees, whoever's filtering people to the governor, because, you know, I don't think the governor goes out and finds these people, you know, unless somebody, you know, comes along, you know, his way that you know, that could happen. But, yeah, I think they're kind of handed to him, and he kind of just, you know, rubber stamp them, all right, you know. So I don't truly think the governor knows what's going on. So, but anyway, so by us getting involved in that, and then all of a sudden there's money involved, right? So now we got the attention of all these attorneys and all these people who saw these, you know, a couple of, you know, millions of dollars are involved. We had they hired event coordinators, and you know they probably put $1,000 into our conference. They put a nice conference on. We really did. I thought, but but what happens in the end is that it was all about money. And then when COVID happened and the money stopped, everything stopped except for the few groups that
except
were
for the
going.
People that were doing the work in the first place, right? Thank
right,
you.
Exactly, yeah. And so it's kind of funny, but you know, and then so there's this bill there's a bill that we're trying to do there. So who wrote this bill? Who was this bill written for? Do you know?
I do believe a reading in here, Representative Jessica Bateman
Right, but who did she writing it for? Who was she?
Well, Brain Injury Community Alliance, and I'm not quite sure. I've asked to join these people, but we'll see who it is. I know that it is one of our members' wives, and one of the board members, I do believe, from the BIAWA, who had an in-person support group, a very limited private group at her house. And it was the only, you know, BIAWA listed support groups on their website. However, as we well know, the money came from the council. And
right. Oh, that's
Janet. Were held by other people. It was just a list of support groups that should have been available, and most of them weren't. So this BICA is Brain Injury Community Alliance. And there's no names of anybody on the website, but they got a hold of these guys that put this bill together. And I'm just dying to see who all, when I called my friend on the BIAWA board, she was completely unaware but completely supportive, because, heck, it's the Tommy Manning Act. And it's about taking the seats that have been vacant on that board, which this council has elected not to fill, since the business of brain injury is now being sold to the government. Council seats remain unrepresented. As of today, 20% of the seats are unrepresented. This was nearly 30 unrepresented in August 23, and 40% represented seats going back to 2018 and 19. But here's the real kicker, you guys. TBI Council seats are 60% represented by state employees. Of the represented state, 60% are occupied by state employees or people holding state contracts with DSHS that pose a conflict of interest. Does not reflect the community representation intended by having a TBI council. And that's verbiage straight out the bill. It's just really about getting the council back in order and giving power back to the community survivors.
Boy, I'll say that's kind of how it is on the alliances and the associations, too. You very seldom find someone on the board of directors. Oh, I'm sorry, Craig, on the board of directors who is a survivor, you know, and the first two, the president and the next one down, get paid a pretty healthy salary, and they're representing a group of people that aren't really represented on the board. Craig, you're on.
It's a tough situation.
Yeah, I know.
Go ahead. I didn't know you had dropped. You're back.
Yeah, no, I'm playing. I got a new earbud, and so I'm going to stop playing with the earbuds, because that's just the second or third time I did that now. First couple times I was listening, but so I just called back in. It's no big deal. But yeah, but when you're talking now, you cut yourself off. But yeah, and that's the problem with doing business with them, is that their priority isn't helping survivors create a fulfilling opportunities that they create themselves. It's them controlling survivors so that they can market us and get the new survivors and new act. I mean, they totally. I mean, they were doing some things like they had the helpline, and so they were getting donations from members, and so they were like filtering the good claims, you know, somebody that they knew would have be a good claim, and they would give it to their the people who donated heavy, you know, the lawyers that did that. You know, they were corrupt in so many ways in how they did business. It's all about
the worst
money.
Part is that it is about the money, but the guy who is facilitating the only group available since COVID, and they took away all the funding for everybody, is called Hey Peers. It's a national platform, and it switches between, you pick, addiction, grief, brain injury, overeating, hangnail solutions. It's just a national platform or support group, seriously. The guy was nice. His name was Nick. He sat behind his desk with his arms folded across his chest, complete with a desk lamp, read 15 minutes of prerequisite rules and regulations, then talked on a topic for 10 minutes. Then each one of the survivors got a chance to say their name and what they thought about the topic, and then there was a 10-minute closing of more legalese, and then the meeting was over. And I only went a couple times. It was hard to get into. It wasn't interactive to me. I went to meet other survivors, and it just wasn't for me. I didn't go back much. But they have, when I went to a council meeting and the facilitator walked in on the executive council, I about fell out my chair. Because then I realized where all the funding, where, you know, people who ran support groups for our community, where all that money went was right back to our executive council. He made a big point of saying he was a volunteer when he ran these groups. And I wondered why. I had no idea who he was until I went to a council meeting and saw him walk in late and realized that facilitator for Hay Piers sits on the executive council. There's got to be some changes.
So she knows Nick. Nick used to do a radio show.
Oh, you know I'm my friend Nick. Well, he's a lovely man, I'm sure, but he's not serving a purpose that my community needs. I don't know anybody that's gone more than once. So that kind of sums it up, right?
Yeah, he was there to serve his purpose when I knew him, too. It's unfortunate. He had a lot of the... He had personality. He could have really taken the Survivor Network. You know, he was the director of it for a while, and he could have taken it to a new plateau, but instead he wanted to take it to make money and make a career. And he didn't care about Survivor, and he just left us behind.
I'll never get. And the 211 takes our money out of the fund. You what?
I just missed him, Nick. Nick was there.
Oh.
When I came, he left.
Was it something
Not
you
because
said
of me.
You?
I.
No, you were here before.
No, I wish I would have had the opportunity.
You were here before Nick. Remember, you were here before Nick. Remember, he did my shadow and I?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, but he's in the old batch of...
Yeah, he did shows, and I fired him because he didn't show up. He wasn't showing up. He did it with his buddy, and I can't remember his buddy's name. He was a school bus driver.
Oh, that Nick. Yeah, okay, never mind. I was thinking of something... Someone different.
See,
yeah,
now we got you on
I do know.
Got you on the right neck. Not the wrong neck, the right neck.
I knew she was on the wrong neck. That's why I was trying to get her there. I got her there finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I exactly know who you're talking about now.
It's a bus
Sorry.
Driver.
One
Go
one
on.
Thing
gave
also,
away.
You know.
Away. How funny.
They take our money to make an overlay to tell people that 211 is for brain injury, and they even took survivor money to try and spoof them with it, right? It's not a bit about brain injury. It's about the same resources that everybody else in the state needs for housing and food and Social Security and, you know, doctors and lawyers and jobs, and it's the same for everybody, but they took a whole bunch of money out of the TBI Survivor Fund to make overlays that says 211 is brain injury friendly.
Well,
it's just been criminal.
It is, but so I would hate to ever see it go back to like the BIA because it was corrupt. They didn't put all the resources in there. I think 211's not a bad idea, but we need to get a survivor.
They need training.
We need a survivor inside of 211 working with it. Since they're getting tons of money, they need to have somebody in there, and that's something we could fight for.
That'd just be wonderful. We've tried to be getting them to give out brain network information, but, you know, there's no way to contact a human to find out where your request went or what the status of it is. You get to mail in your request to be put on the information resource list, and then after that, you're on your own.
Right, they put you on there, and then and there's not a lot of resources, so you're going to get a lot of calls from them.
Well, we sure hope everybody comes to the network. Again, that's community.brainnetwork.ngo. And NGO is a new one. I think we've just run out of all the .net, .com, .org. NGO stands for non-governmental organization. That kind of helps you remember what the NGO stands for. 501c3s, non-governmental organizations. So a new ending for everybody. But everything we do is free, five support groups a week, educational resources. Other support groups are joining. KitSat Brain Injury has joined us, runs their coffee clutch through there, and it's just doubled everybody's fun.
Yeah, so we need to get a – do we have an accurate list of all the groups that are in the state? Probably not, but we probably should put something together.
I have reached out about – in October, I reached out, and that's how I met Bo and Bill at KitSat, to everybody that was on the brain injury list of the Alliance Association / – because Washington also started out as an association – I worked there 3 years, and my tax form came from the association, but my paycheck came from the Alliance.
Hmm. Oh, I thought you had to be one or the other.
You
mm-hmm.
do.
I would, oh. too. Hmm. When I asked, because I was trying to buy some property again a couple years ago, I called because I turned in my pay stubs and I turned in my tax forms, and the lender, the broker company, said, well, which one do you work for? So I called the BIA and asked, and I got a really long story about signed up as the association, but they wanted way too much money to not serve the same needs we wanted, so we switched over to the Alliance, apparently in name only. I don't know how it all worked out, but I was interested, Kim, when you said the same thing was in Nebraska. You were both.
No,
you've been both, and
well,
I thought that was interesting.
Here's the way, wait.
The way it was.
They found a way to save about 40% of their affiliation costs, and they could do what they wanted. There's a long story behind Adler. Got insulted by at a conference, and you know, I'm not going to get into it. Yeah, no, there's more to that.
There's way more to it. Okay, well, I asked in order to buy something, and I just got the standard rigmarole, but you know, I worked there for 3 full years and wasn't invited to a staff meeting or
they were not
to speak to the board. So,
association whatsoever. Matter of fact, if they knew that they even said that, they would sue the shit out of them. Although Susan's not the director no more. Who's the director there now, Kim? I can't remember his name. Her name, I mean.
Well, Deborah Crowley was the director when I came until just the last gala a year and a half ago, so we dropped the mic there. And then Scott Slater took over as the interim director and did his best, but the office has been gone for over a year and a half, and as of September 30th was Scott and Amy Farr, our resource manager that was there. Now, the good news, I called the other day to see how the phone was being answered, and Jennifer Pelliquin picked it up. Jennifer's been on the resource line since I first got injured in 2010. She was leading the support group at Harborview when I went there. She drug Joel and I up to the office, gave us our big start. Jennifer is my hero. I call her Jenna Flower, and she's answering the phone today. So that was the best news I've had in a year on BIAWAs, to have Jennifer at the end of that phone line.
So evidently they still have the phone number then.
Well, they have the 467-4800 number for the office. The resource line number has been gone since the contract's been gone for a couple of years.
Okay.
And the office has been gone for almost a couple of years.
Oh, great.
But they did have Amy part-time. Yeah. And you could at least call in and talk to somebody, you know, because I can't imagine being that parent or, you know, the sibling who is just right out of, you know, intensive care, trying to find out what to do next and get a recording that says, we're out of funding, sorry about your luck. So, you know, they may not be able to do a lot, but hear somebody say, thank you for calling us. We're here for you. How can I help you today? Which is just a world of difference, I think,
their
in how people feel about brain injury.
Our national page is still asking for money. The time I find them come in handy is when it's Awareness Month, because the statistics are all on their homepage. So during Awareness Month, if you want some quick facts, you can look on the site. They were still looking for donations, but here, that one, when I say one and a quarter women, one full-time person runs the Brain Injury Alliance, and she has a little clerical help a couple times a week, like to help with a mailing or whatever. So the gal isn't even really a part-time employee, but it's the same person that was the Brain Injury Association. And then when they changed to Alliance, I asked her what that was about, and her simple answer is just that when you're part of the association, you have to pay dues to the national association. And when you're little, like an office of one and a quarter people running it, and nothing's really going on, obviously any money that they collected at that once a year scratchy t-shirt run, you know, most of that was going to pay their national dues. And so they decided, the states that decided it was too heavy on their pockets to pay national dues to the association became alliances. But the problem with that, as I see it, and I don't favor either of them because of what you said, if you're a survivor or a caregiver and you're calling in to get help, that isn't the place to call. But I forgot what I was going to say. But the alliance, I was going to say, when you're a part of the association, theoretically in any group that has a national office, then there's some cohesiveness and a plan for everybody, every group in the country that's a member of the association. When you're paying dues, you normally get something back. You know, I don't know whether it's handouts or the t-shirts paid for, or whatever it might be. Money for support groups, for example, would be a really good one, you know, snacks or something, anything. But when they didn't provide anything except that you got to call yourself the Nebraska Association or whatever, they were just sending most all their money they would do with anything else they had planned to the National Association. But when different states split off and became alliances, they were really steering the ship on their own for their state. They didn't have a central place for all the alliance directors to meet and to come up with a plan. So, you know, every state was just separate. So,
yep, to each their own, I guess. But, you know, we really did serve a service in having a resource line at one place and answering the phone on a regular basis for people that called in. I just thought it was kind of weird. I wasn't allowed to answer the phone, but when you called in, they said, well, it sounds like you need support. Have you talked to Michelle? And they gave my home number. which was okay, which is what I had set up because there was no place for these guys to go. During COVID, when everybody shut down, we opened up 20 hours a week in Zoom and wrote a weekly newsletter. We weren't going to let that happen. The survivor stepped up and said, you know, this is like being having another brain injury, this isolation and not making my own choices and I can't get the food and nothing's the same anymore. And so we just stepped it up tenfold. You know, it's what we do, huh, Craig?
It is. It is. Well, ladies, great
well,
show.
Well, Craig spent a lot of that time sick.
Yep.
What time?
Nothing. I just said you spent a lot of that time sick. COVID time.
Yeah,
you were busy being in the hospital.
Wasn't COVID though, which is weird.
Nope.
Yeah, I was in the hospital, but wasn't COVID.
Nope.
Weird enough, yeah. That's interesting. I never thought of it like that, but yeah. But that was toward the end of COVID because they let me have a visitor a day. Yeah, one visitor a day.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not sure you'll ever convince me of that, but I'm not the doctor.
All right. Well, guys,
well one
I'm
thing I know.
I got to get up. My day starts at 4:30, so I'm going to hit the sack.
I know. I'm not far
All
behind
right.
you, but thank you, Craig. Thank you for dropping in and the good cheer. And I'll never forget meeting you at that first 2012 conference and you're running around with your radio shows that night and you're shoving the microphone in everybody's face asking them who they were going to vote for. And all I could do was look at your handsome face and your beautiful eyes and I couldn't get a word out my mouth. I'd never been so embarrassed. Long time ago, friend. Thank you again
Good
for
night.
Coming. Really appreciate
Good
it.
Good night, everybody.
All right. And Craig is my guest on Tuesday night.
Night.
You want to come back and hear
yes.
Craig Cecilia again? We'll see him next Tuesday night. Thank you, Craig.
Okay. Yeah,
thanks that was nice.
To Craig for coming in. So is that where you met? Because I remember, because I was running the studio that night, and he, for a conference, and him and Les Paul were running around with microphones, putting them in people's
yep.
face. But you'll see
that was
you'll see when you're a host that was so hard for me on this end because, you know, they were having fun and I get what they were trying to do and what they were trying to do was good. But for me and our listeners, it was so loud at that conference and his mic was echoing and him and Les, if they got anywhere near each other, it was one of those noises that makes anybody, but particularly a brain injury survivor, their head starts spinning and wanting to puke because the wow, 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 you know.
Yes, the feedback
the
was crazy. We were downstairs in a closed area with a swimming pool in it. So the sound was just bouncing
yes.
off the walls. It was the first time we'd met in person. I had spoken with him several times and knew of him. And then after that, I got to be with him just a couple times a year when he would come to do the training. For the training manual that he set up in 2012, which was approved by TBI Model Systems and, again, the Dr. Janet Mott from BIAW. He'd been the caseworker there for 30 years, a wonderful woman. And so, yeah, it was just a real rare occasion when I got to be in the room with him, but it was just so exciting to go to those conferences and be with other survivors. Unfortunately, it was mostly, again, about fundraising, continuing education credits. So the classes were, some of them were really geared to what the survivors wanted to do, but what we really wanted to do was hang down by that pool and sit and talk. individually. And there wasn't any time allowed for that except for maybe 1 hour at night. Even every lunchtime, there was a keynote speaker where you couldn't even get to know the people at your table, and then you were ushered off into another class after another class where you couldn't talk. So I would like to see, in my world, a conference would be where the people communicated with each other more, and there were more group times for people to get to know each other and make bonds.
Yeah, you know, some of those places, that's the kind of great thing that an association or an alliance could contribute to, and that's just paying for the space and not coming, you know, just funding the space for you guys to do something like that, or guys or any guys, you know, just funding the venue, you know, that would hold a group like that, and then have the group do the conference.
That's what I learned at the People First of Washington conference in September, Kim, that I went to. They had it at Central Washington University, and the people really do put it on. And they picked the speakers, and they picked who they wanted there, and they picked what they wanted to eat, and they picked what they wanted to do, and they had a dance, and they had their elections during that time, and they picked the spot for next year's conference because the people are in charge of it all. Maybe in 2025, Craig and I are talking about TBI Network and Brain Network, the east side and the west side putting on a state conference someplace, which was the people's conference, where the survivors could really have what they needed and wanted, and they could be heard. I think that would just be the best thing ever.
I do too. So it's interesting then, well, you're a hell of a lot closer than I am, but, you know, he and I have known each other, what, like 14 years now, and have never met.
Oh, dear. It'll be a great day, I promise. So wonderful. Just as a person, just amazing. Amazing man. Hope he brings Gracie. His beautiful dog.
Known,
I don't want anybody to...
I knew.
Yeah.
No. I know Gracie. I knew his dog before. We're both very dog people. I had 4 when he met me. I knew his last dog, too. And, in fact, I was shooting off names the night that he got Gracie, and that was one of them I suggested. But because he was, you know, you're hurt when you lose a dog, and he wasn't in any rush, which I don't, you know, go one way or another on, but he really wasn't in any rush to go get another dog, but had the attitude for a while there, which I think a lot of people go through, that, you know, really you're not replacing the dog that went. There's a lot of puppy spirits out there that need to have a good home, and like, I'm sure you're a good home. I know Craig is. We are. You know, so I was talking to him because at a point he was so depressed about losing his dog. And I said, why don't you just look? Just go look a little around at different breeds and see what you like. You don't have to dive in the water, but I knew that eventually he'd wind up getting a dog if he went out looking enough. And it was so cool when he did get her, because it was like, you know, really having a broken heart, and then there's that new baby with the vulnerable eyes, and you're my dad, you know, And
puppy breath.
You know, it doesn't take the hurt. Yeah, it doesn't take away, you know, the hurt for the one you left, but it does force you to look forward, you know, and hopefully when you look backward, you remember the happy memories and all the good times. And when you look forward, you look at, you know, that puppy who they're very demanding when they're a puppy. You know, they have a lot of needs and
those,
stuff. So,
and razor,
you know,
sharp teeth.
Got to be focused. Yes.
Yes.
And razor sharp teeth. And then the band, you know, we've got songs. He used to play a lot of music. I got a couple of his songs from the band that he was in under two different names for 15 years. I always wished I could have gone to a concert. The conference thing really turned me off because it was so loud.
Yeah.
Again, I know what he was trying to do, share the conference with the rest of the world. It's just that, you know, when you're there and you're excited and you're running around with the mic, but you're here or you're home listening to the show and you can't hear what's being said, you know, and you have that echo and the bad feedback and everything, it's like, I really wanted to hang up.
You know? But you couldn't.
Have fun, you guys. Well, today I would, but back then I wouldn't have. I just would have. Oops, the line dropped.
Sunspot.
Bad connection.
Mm-hmm.
I see we have quite a few people on the switchboard. If there is anyone who would like to welcome Michelle or has a question, feel free to press 1. That'll let us know that you want to talk, and otherwise I'll know that you're just listening. That was something we didn't talk about in training before. I talked to you about muting and unmuting the mic. The first, I had you draw boxes.
Yes, a little diagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your little diagram. So the first diagram was, you wrote red in it. That's for a live mic, you and me. The first box next to our phone. Oh, in fact, I'll show you what it looks like lit. Okay, everybody, now that I was talking about the conference and how obnoxious that was, I will... there was no way that I could show her this before when we were training, because we're not actually live training. Great, I want to talk to you about this picture I sent you later. It's a quick comment. But anyway, you'll see that your number and my number are glowing red with the first box. That means our mic is live. The third one down, you'll see, is glowing blue, and they're muted. A muted mic.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you see where on air is lit up. It wasn't the day we were in the studio because we were not on air, but now we are, and the clock is ticking down. We have about 25 minutes left in the show.
Oh, I see.
So
thank you for the little
like.
Text picture. I thought, she knows I'm not on my computer. She knows I'm on my phone. How does she think I'll see this? Oh, I'll look at the text. Perfect. Okay, that makes perfect sense now, Kim. Thank you.
Yeah, then the other thing that wasn't there... Pardon me, folks, we're doing a little training. Ron is a good MI. I can't do two things at once. You know how that goes. I mentioned to you the chat room that was in the middle of the screen, and I mentioned to you the red button that said end episode, like if we wanted to end it, we don't. But I'm saying if, you know, with 24 minutes left in the show, let's say we thought we had covered all the ground we wanted to, and we know that the clock is set for 2 hours, and we want to end the show manually. When you get that next picture, you'll see a red button that says end episode. It wasn't there when we did the training. And
okay.
That's the way that you would just say, okay, folks, we appreciate you listening, and I'll be back on. I'd suggest that you, for me, I'm on every Wednesday, so I say see you next week. For you, I would recommend that you look up the date of the fourth Tuesday of each month. I'll go ahead and repeat that. The fourth Tuesday of each month is when Michelle's going to be on. So at the end of your show, I'd recommend that you say, I will see you next month on February, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. 1, 2, 3, 4. The 22nd. Yeah, I'll see you next month on February 22nd. Just to let people know, so they know
February
when you're going to be on again.
February 22nd is a Thursday.
You're right. The 20th.
That's my son's birthday. It's also Nelson
right?
Mandela's birthday.
No,
I had
wait.
To do a
no, no, no.
I thought, no,
no,
it's
no,
a
no.
Thursday.
One, nope, nope. It's the 27th. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is Tuesday, February
27th.
Will be, yeah. And I would just
excellent.
Recommend that you look that up each month just to let the listeners know when you'll be back, because since you're new, they're going to like the show and go, where did she go? Where did she go? So I'll just take this last few minutes to repeat that we're on the phone, We're on the show tonight with Michelle Kaufman. She's a brand new host. I wanted to bring her on my show to introduce her to everybody, get a little background. The fourth Tuesday of this month happens to be next Tuesday. So Michelle's going to be sort of flying solo. She'll be doing her first show on her own next Tuesday. We'll make sure that she gets through that. Craig will be coming back and guesting on her show. And I'd recommend, you know, anybody that wants to call in and welcome her, or, you know, any of your own friends that might want to call from your groups to say hello. And from then on, she'll be on the fourth Tuesday of each month, and hopefully remember to mention it, or even and or to put it in her program notes. Make sure to come back next month. My husband and I have been watching.
Absolutely.
We found a channel with old TV shows, and we found one with, you remember the Beverly Hillbillies? Y'all come back now, you hear?
Jed Clampett. Oh, my goodness. Ellie Mae. Grandma. Oh, yeah. I love Beverly Hillbillies.
It made me think of you in your program notes. Y'all come back now next month on whatever the date is going to be. And that's a good reason to write it down and to mention it at the end of your show, because of what I just did, which is tell the wrong date. So we do get confused around here. It's helpful. Someone does have their hand up. 206, who's this?
Hey, this is Jackie Figueroa in Seattle, and I'm a participant in Michelle's organization, or I don't know how to word it, but We have a fun time over here, and I want to thank you for inviting me here tonight to listen in. And I wrote it on my calendar for next month, so I'll be listening in again next month. I'm a survivor, and I can relate to all of the comments that were shared tonight about what is, you know, how brain injury survivors live. I have two brain injuries, and one is in 1974, hit in a crosswalk in L.A., and it was a pretty devastating situation. I had to, when I was hit, I was thrown 40 feet, so I landed on my left side, and I just went out. I had a concussion. I went out for a short moment. But the other thing that happened was I had to learn to walk again. I got diagnosed wrong at the doctor's. I was clearly upset about not being able to walk, but they labeled me bipolar. Well, hey, I'm supposed to be upset. If I wasn't upset, I would kind of like not be really human, I guess. But anyway, so I was misdiagnosed and given the medication and all that kind of for bipolar. And so eventually I came to my senses and I said, nope, I'm not taking that medicine. I'm not doing that. It's a little more detailed than what I'm running through you right now. But then I got my second TBI was in 2019, where I fell on a piece of listed concrete on the sidewalk, and that was pretty traumatic. I went backwards. I went all the recovery that I had worked so hard for all those years from 74 to 2019. I think it was, I don't remember how many years, 45 or something like that, and all that hard work was just like, here I go again, and I couldn't talk again. Mm-hmm. I had to relearn how to talk. So anyway, and that's how I met Michelle after my second TBI, because I was just struggling. I was just really, really struggling with life. Like, I couldn't figure out what was going on in my brain. Thoughts were just dropping and not really. I just was having a terrible time. So when I met Michelle, she had all these nice workshops going on. And it was a connection to people who understood, to people who've had the life experience. It was a connection that she could just felt, you know, hey, these people, they understand. And I can talk to them and I can socialize with them. And we went places, to the park and picnics and weekly outings and on Zoom throughout the week, 20 hours a week, and just all kind of, and the stuff that, you know, Michelle put together, it was the kind of stuff that the doctors that I went to, they offered like therapies and what have you, but somehow it was, the environment was different, so the response for me was different, or the
effect
like
on me
another, was different.
Not quite like
Say
another
again?
Survivor, huh? Not quite like another survivor. You seemed to have
more
a little
normal.
More insight.
You know, it was great to connect with people who understood and who are experiencing the same thing that I'm going through, and then they understood me. I understood them, they understood me, and hey, you know, hey, it was great. This is my community now. So anyway, welcome, Michelle. Good to know
thank
that you,
you
got
Jackie.
You,
thank
you
for
show coming
calling
on.
In.
Yeah, I forgot that you had given me the right
Jackie,
number
nice.
Earlier, but I got it now, so I wrote it down for
all right.
Time.
Well,
we'll be back on
her.
Tuesday
I'm
night
on every
next
Wednesday
week,
night,
so.
And she'll be back. Yeah, maybe you can come back and be a guest on her show sometime. So you guys are
okay.
in touch, and thanks for calling in, Jackie. It's nice to meet
you,
and welcome. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jackie. All right.
Yes, Michelle. Hey, you got it, girl.
Bye. See you tomorrow.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Oh, we just have a great big old family that we put together over the years. We met in person for so long, and, you know, we met as survivors, and we became friends, and we grew into family. And it's just the most wonderful thing, because so many of us have had family that have walked away, turned away, left us behind, that we've lost just to the normal ways of life, that it's just nice to know when you find people that you can relate to, that you love, that you can be with them on a regular basis. You look forward to seeing them, and they look forward to seeing you. And family is the best, and community is family.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for being here tonight with me and allowing me to introduce you to our audience. And, you know, we haven't had anyone in your slot for a while, and I just felt like it would be a good idea, since I'm here every Wednesday, to have you come on my show so that we could say that there's going to be someone in that slot. You know, a lot of people aren't haven't been used to plugging into that slot because we haven't had a host in it. So now that we do, I thought it would be a great idea, opportunity to have you as a guest on my show and to introduce you to everybody and let everyone know before next Tuesday to pen it in tonight. And
well, thank
call the same
you
number.
So very much, Kim. Yes, 424-243-9540, because everybody knows somebody with a brain injury. That special somebody just may not know it yet.
That's right. That's right. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you goodnight. I usually close with a song from Craig. Actually got me started when he was an independent artist. You know, you guys are talking about funding in the brain injury community before, but funding in the arts is not great either. And so independent artists work so much harder than ones that are on label. When you're on label, you know, a lot of times your work loses its integrity and you're not in charge of your own work anymore. But to gain your independence, there's a price for that too. You don't get sometimes as much exposure. So
right.
I went around to independent artists, which is all I have on my board, and wanted to help those people. And a lot of those people, you know, it's really weird. When I first started calling to do this, I called five, the first three of them, three out of five random. I called them because they were musicians, okay? Happened to have had brain injury touch their life. One had a brain tumor. One grew up with a mom who had a brain injury, and the third one had a brain injury of his own. So, you know, being isolated out here in the middle of the country where I didn't meet anyone else, it was amazing during that time. Everywhere I turned, whether it was on the show or looking for indie musicians, and not everyone on here is an indie musician, but that was my first experience with finding them, is that three out of the first five I got a hold of. Well, and you know what? The other one, the fourth one did not have that, did not have a brain injury, but just a couple of years ago, she was newly married and had a new baby. Baby was probably going on one. Young, healthy couple. He went out riding his bike all the time for exercise. And he went out that night, didn't come back. And he had the same thing I did. He had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and he died.
Oh.
And that was terribly sad. The little boy will never meet his dad. So I guess now in retrospect, that's 4 out of 5. In the beginning, it was 3 out of 5. And then as time went on, I'll have to look at that 5th one and see as time passed on. Yeah. So somebody in the chat said, makes you think how lucky we are. And that is very true. So anyway, tonight I'm going to close out with neither of those, but thank you again, Michelle Kaufman. Welcome to the team. We're looking forward to having you back on Tuesday and the 4th Tuesday of every month. Enjoyed having you tonight. Thank you, everyone in the chat. Great to see Hatter and Ron again. And there's a picture of the chat room on that second picture that I sent you, Michelle. And tonight I'm going to close with someone that I did see in concert, but I thought it was very kind of them to let me play their song because I liked it. This is something we all have to find some of in recovery, and that's how to be fierce and resilient and keep going. But the name of this song is Fierce by Jesus Culture. So good night and God bless everybody. I will see you next week, as will Michelle. Good night.
You answer me. all its assault. Crazy.